Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 35, Worldwide Partner Conference Announcements. My name is Sujit Mello. I am a senior consultant with Microsoft, focused on the app dev space. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Kale Teeter. Kale?
Hi, Sujit. I'm Kale Teeter. I'm an MCS consultant from the New York region, and I work mostly with .NET application development, but also a lot of things with Windows Azure.
Hey, Kale. It's good to be back to the show. I know I took a couple of weeks off for some vacation and whatnot, so out of the country for a little while, so internet connectivity was a little bit spotty. Didn't want to take a chance on it, but you guys did a great job with the Azure backup episode.
No, good to have you back. I think the listeners might be thinking that you and Evan are the same person because it seems like one of you is usually missing.
you're the steady guy. I can see that. excellent job. And it's good to have Will on the last episode there. And it was a good discussion on Azure Backup. So very well done.
Yeah, that's great. And so one thing, Sujit, I wanted to kind of kick off today. We get some comments from time to time on these shows, and one comment we did get, I think it was 2 weeks ago, actually. It was right after we did episode 33, which was on cloud authentication. And so the listener was, who's actually a pretty experienced in the Azure space. He has his own show, the Microsoft Cloud Show. And he had raised some points that are really good, actually, and so I wanted to address those.
Sure.
And, you know, what he was mentioning was, you know, in general, when we're doing the podcast, it seems like we're talking more, maybe along the lines, maybe we're favoring more of the bigger enterprise solution kind of things. So when we're talking about all these features, we're talking about how they fit in with larger enterprises. And, you know, there's a lot of small business out there, and that's also like a huge place for Azure to go because that's a big benefit, right? If it's a mm-hmm. startup or a small company and you can't build your own servers or you can't afford it, this is where these cloud technologies can really help a lot.
Yep.
So, you know, and we were talking about cloud authentication on that one, and it's a lot about Windows Azure Active Directory. And so just to address a couple things about that, one is, you know, in the larger enterprises, we typically have much more complex solutions, right, with ADFS and all kinds of redundancy and these types of things. But if you're just a small business, you know, let's say it's, you know, 5-10 people, and you don't need all that complexity, again, this is like a huge thing where Azure can really step in and kind of save the day for you.
Mm-hmm.
So in that model, the thing you have to remember about Azure Active Directory at this stage is it's not the exact same as an LDAP source as the on-premise version of AD. And it can give you things like authentication, authorization. You can do your group membership and those types of things. But it can't do, you know, machines, group policy, all the other added things that come along with full-blown Active Directory.
Okay.
So in that respect, it would be hard for a larger business where you want to manage the workstations tightly. Maybe even you have something like System Center to put, you know, software out there. You know, the smaller companies don't need that complexity, right? They only have a couple people. They can manage the desktops themselves. So in that respect, I think even if you were to set up in an IaaS VM, you could set Active Directory up. I think that's overkill. So for the small business, I think just using Windows Azure Active Directory, maybe have your Exchange mailboxes up there in O365.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are one and the same. So that takes care of that complexity. Now you don't have to have Exchange, and you have a directory source with all your users and the attributes about those users. And then, you know, on the workstation side, you just manage your workstations yourself. So that's one way to do it. Another way would be to either run Hyper-V, or if you didn't have Hyper-V, run fire up an instance of IaaS, a small one, install Active Directory there, and you have to create a connection between there. And that's that's where I think it's starting to get a little more complex for a small shop. So, but you could set up a VPN tunnel between your on-premise Windows 2012 server or a Cisco device or something, or you know, one of our VPN devices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you could have that communication to do the stuff. But in general, the really small sector like that, like the startup type stuff, just use Windows Azure Active Directory and forgo, you know, all that complexity.
So the only thing that you're missing is that you can't manage your computer devices, right, in AD?
Yeah, you can't have that. So things like group policy and that type of system management is harder to do there.
Now, don't we have other services like Intune or whatever, what do they call it, that do some of that? We have other cloud services that can take that role on, right?
Yeah, we have other cloud services that can do some of that. I think Intune's a little more for devices, you know,
okay.
So being able to do the MDM stuff, the mobile device management, so tablets, phones, that kind of thing, doing wipes. But to some extent, you can do some of that with O365, again, for a smaller type shop.
Great. That's good. That really addresses his question. Thank you. Okay, so, this week, was it this week or last week, has been the Worldwide Partner Conference, right? I think it was last week. And this is, it's a global event in that, you know, all our partners from all over the world descend upon one place, and Microsoft, you know, kind of shares with them all the latest and greatest stuff that's happening in Microsoft. I think most people know that most of our business at Microsoft is through partners. Microsoft itself doesn't do a whole lot of business. We rely on partners to resell a lot of our solutions, so they are very close to us. And it's a good thing to have them all over and have them share with them all the good things that are happening. And specifically now in the Windows Azure space, or not Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure space, we can share with them all the latest things that are happening in Azure, and in fact, there have been a lot of updates that happened in the past week, which were shared with them, and we'd like to just share some of them with our listeners. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, just to clarify, I think it started on the 13th, so
okay.
That was like Sunday, and it's running till tomorrow. We're recording this on the 16th, yeah.
So it's still going on as we speak.
Amazing. Yep.
Okay, so this is hot off the press then. So a couple of things that I really liked in this particular announcement list, the two that were close to me, I'm going to talk about, and then I know there's a couple of others which, Kale, we can talk about together. The first one is the Event Hubs public preview, and the second one is a machine learning public preview. Now, Kale, you might remember, it was one of the previous episodes, we talked about the Internet of Things, right?
Yep.
And one of the kind of needs of Internet of Things is to be able to consume these large amounts of data that are being pumped out by all these millions of devices that you have out there, right? Could be sensors on a ship, on an airplane, the Fitbit band that you know, some of us wear. All these little things are spitting out data, and you have to have one place where you can collect all that data and process it. And Microsoft has got a service that we announced at that time, at that particular episode, which is the Intelligent Systems Service, which is kind of like an all-encompassing service that does a lot of things for you. But if you prefer to roll a little bit this on your own, there's this new facility that's been released in public preview called the Event Hubs, which can help you do that. And if you take Event Hubs, and I don't think anybody has connected these two, Kale, but I see Event Hubs and the machine learning services as going hand in hand, because they can, you know, one can help the other. Event Hubs is something that helps you collect all the information, and the machine learning can help you process that information and make sense of it. So let's take a few minutes to explain what these two services are about, and then we can kind of go from there. So Event Hubs. So what Event Hubs allows you to do is to reliably and efficiently stream millions of events per second from millions of devices into multiple applications and storage systems. Okay, so we've got all these events coming in. We need to be able to collect them and process them. Now, It's easy to say that, but when you're talking about doing it at scale, this is a very difficult problem to solve, which is why Microsoft has made the service available to you. They do all the hard part about, you know, queuing the messages, storing them, making sure that nothing is lost, okay? And all you have to worry about is processing them, okay? And even that is done in such an easy way. It's very easy to build apps that can actually process these messages. Let me give you a quick overview on what the service allows you to do. So, when you build applications that process data, you want to be able to have different load profiles. Like some apps, you know, you need to process them in millisecond, response time. The other apps, maybe you process them at night or at the month end, you know, the data comes in different frequencies. So you can assign these load profiles to these applications, and you can create various buckets or partitions in with this event hub system. And at its very core, Event Hubs is very, very similar to Service Bus, right? We all know about Service Bus. We had a couple of episodes on it already. Service Bus has things like queues and topics today, which are kind of like topics is queues are, you know, what queue, the first in, first out kind of system, and topics is a publish, subscribe mechanism. So the Event Hub sits is a peer to these queues and topics, and it sits right next to them in Service Bus. An Event Hub is made up of partitions. As I mentioned earlier, partitions can be assigned different load profiles so that you can have multiple different kinds of messages going to a different partition. And just like you have publish subscribe in the Event Hub world, they're called publishers and consumers. Okay, so publishers are all these millions of devices publishing all the information into the Event Hub, and the consumers are the applications that you write that are going to make sense, are going to take this data and do something with it. Okay, and the programming part of it is really easy. It's just a callback that you have to define in your application, and you know, essentially the Event Hub will call you back every time there is a message for that particular partition in the Event Hub.
So Sujeet, sorry, just to jump in here. I'm just trying to gather this because this is kind of new to me too, this topic. But just taking a step back, is this really kind of like a wrapper? Because it seems like I could probably build this myself anyhow using the Service Bus and the technologies we have existing.
You could. Yeah, go ahead. You want something else?
So it feels more like this is kind of like a wrapper or even like a layer on top of that to kind of, I think you said it, but is that what it is? It's a layer there to abstract away all those details so you don't have to manage and deal with all that queue stuff and topics.
Exactly.
You just have an API that you're interfacing with.
There's two key points here. One is that it takes away all that. You know how when you deal with queues, you got to worry about whether you read the item from the queue, that it's only read once, you know, all that logic. You have to program that every time. This is done for you, so you don't have to worry about it, right? They're going to guarantee that every message will get consumed and processed once. The messages are guaranteed to be in the same sequence as they came in, even though, you know, you may be blasting it. It's going to maintain an order and sequence with the message, which is very important with all these messages. You know, you want to make sure they're in the right sequence. And then the thirdly is that when it comes time to processing these messages, you only have to write a simple callback in your application, and the service and the Event Hub calls you back. Whereas otherwise, you'd have to write all these. You know, you'd have to spin up a whole bunch of worker roles, threads, and reading the queues, and making sure that only one copy of the queue was of a message was processed, and things like that. It's complicated business, and you don't have to worry about it, you know. And the second part is that the scale is very important in these things. When you're talking of millions of messages coming per second, you'd have to worry about, does that mean I need to spin up, 100 VMs to process these messages? No, you don't, because you only have to tell the Event Hub, this particular partition is going to be getting so many messages per second. That's all you have to tell it. It does everything else for you. It will automatically create the right amount of virtual machines or resources that require networking resources, etc., to process all these messages in that particular load profile. Another partition may only be getting a few messages a day. That will have a much lower, processing load profile. And you don't have to do it. All you have to do is to create these load profiles, and it does everything else for you. It spins up all the right number of resources for you. So I thought this was a really nice way where you take something that's essentially difficult to do, and you would have to do it over and over again, and you essentially make it easy for anybody to use it. So that's event hubs for you, and it uses HTTP protocol for sending the messages. There's a JavaScript sample that they provide, and for consuming the messages, for writing these applications that consume them, you can use .NET. You use the AMQP protocol, which is the kind of like a standard queuing protocol, where they provide you .NET, C, or Java JMS support for taking these messages and doing something with it. So that's the public preview of the event hubs. Kale, another thing that I'd like to talk about is the machine learning, which is something that I was very, very excited to read and learn about. And it's sort of the second part about this entire Internet of Things, right? We just talked about how we can consume and take all these billions of messages and put it somewhere. Now, what do we do with that data? I mean,
Yeah, and this is one that's been coming for a while. There's been some rumblings about this, and again, I think, Sajid, back to your point, it's the common theme here of, figuring out you got this really complex thing that you have to do. Like you said, if you have millions of messages coming in, it's quite a complex task, years ago for us to try to do that. Mm-hmm. And now, a single person sitting in their home could build an application to do that. On the same token, machine learning is another one. Years past, it's been, you need to be a scientist. I mean, to do this kind of stuff. And, even beyond that, you needed a massive amount of money because all the computers you would need to build this thing.
Right.
And be able to crunch numbers like at the scale that we need to do here. And so, again, this is lower in that bar. This is, I think it's way more than an API, but it's a whole service layer on top of these things, the underlying technologies to do this kind of analysis.
Right, and it's not just the service layer, it also comes with an IDE. They call it the ML Studio, the Machine Learning Studio. And what it lets you do is lets you quickly just drag, a data set into this IDE, into this app, okay, and then you can apply certain what they call experiments, which is trying to make some sense of the data. So they have a whole library of the experiments, and then you could run an experiment, for example, if you wanted to show what are the trends on your website, something. You could run an experiment for that where it would go through your data and create a list of all the trends on your website, and you could then display that on your website to all your users that are logging in. So that drag and drop approach requires no code whatsoever. Everything's out of the box. However, some of our listeners may know that machine learning has a language of its own. Yeah, it's actually the language is known as R, the letter R, and in fact, the ML Studio does use R under the covers. It's just that if you use the drag and drop approach, you don't have to do it. It generates the R for you. However, if you already have say maybe a large company already has data scientists on board who have written some R code already to process their data sets, you could take that R code, upload it to Azure, and it would work just perfectly right there. So I thought, these two things are, very, very cool. Being able to take large amounts of data and process them and create something, do some analysis and predictive analysis is what they call it, right? You take historical data and you use that to do predictive analysis on the future. And that's what machine learning lets you do.
Yeah, I think the other cool thing to call out here is, typically in the past when we were doing like data warehousing things, one of the big issues with cloud processing in that model is how do you get all the data there, mm-hmm. right? So you might have terabytes or petabytes of data, and we had this really nice, you know, with Hadoop and some of the big data stuff that we had, to be able to crunch that stuff once it's there. And there, and there's not, to be clear, there's not a I think there's a transaction cost on the storage, but there's no, as you're using it up there inside Azure, you're not paying for anything to transfer that data around other than that small transaction fee. And, you know, the same thing applies here, except for now you have these little transactions coming through, like you mentioned before, event hubs or something of that nature. So you're building that data up there. And because it's inbound, I would assume that you're only paying that transaction cost. You're not going to pay, because there's no egress happening here until you start to pump it out.
Yep.
So it's super cost effective to do something at scale. You know, I think that's a big point.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent point. I like the fact that you mentioned it can hook up with HD inside or Hadoop big data. So you can do some big data processing of your data, get a smaller data set, take that smaller data set, pump it into machine learning, do a predictive analysis on it, and pump out some nice results for you. Cool. So those are two things that are in preview. And if you're interested, please go. We'll put some links on the website where you can go and sign up for the previews if that kind of stuff is what you are interested in. A few more things that got were announced over at WPC. Just want to cover them real quick. One of them is the Azure Redis cache. This is a one of the, you know, we have the managed cache service, and then we also have the Azure Redis cache facility available for you. And they've come up with a whole bunch of new larger cache sizes now. So you know, if that's a service that you use, take a look at that. The one thing that I will alert our listeners to is that if you were using the older caching system, the shared caching, that's going to be decommissioned September 1st. So you got to migrate onto managed cache service or to the Redis cache in the next few weeks. So please take a note of that if you use caching. And then there's some drops in prices for the Azure Block Storage and also service bus queues and topic prices. Changes are coming into effect. You know, it's all, you know, lowering the cost. So almost everyone's going to benefit with this.
Yeah, to be clear, Sajid, on the blob storage, it's about a math thing, right? So it's a decimal point or adding a decimal point to the precision of the pricing. And in that way, you could obviously save money because if you're not using it, yeah.
Yeah, they don't round it off like they used to.
Yep.
Very good. And so we've got some new data centers now, or new regions that we announced.
Yeah, and we just announced some. I think we announced that on the last podcast we did, the ones in Brazil, and now there's two other ones, and these are U.S. bound. Mm-hmm. So we have one in the central region in Iowa, and there's one in the East Coast as well in Virginia.
So that's the second one for Virginia, right? We always had one, and now they've added a second one there.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the interface yet because they call it US East 2. So I'm not sure how that'll show up in the interface, but yeah. And those are GA, right?
Yep, those are GA. They're ready to go, so anybody could use that. And how about these new Azure Portal features? Have you checked them out yet?
Yeah, I've been looking at that, specifically the resource groups. So that's a new thing, and I wasn't even, you know, too accustomed with that, but that's got a huge potential. And again, for the smaller shops even, it benefits everybody, but, you know, it really lowers the bar to doing things like SharePoint on infrastructure as a service. That's just one example, but you can build resource groups up there of cloud stuff, right? So you can drop resources into this resource group, and then you can use that resource group to create other ones that are just like that.
Oh, I see. So you create like a template of it.
Exactly.
And you play that. That's pretty neat.
So that works really well. There's been some, and also now with the new portal, and when we say the new portal, to be clear, we'll drop this in the show notes, but if you want to check it out, you just go to portal.azure.com. Typically, you just go to manage.azure.com for the existing portal, or just azure.com will redirect to the current existing production one. If you go to portal.azure.com, go to that URL, you'll be able to see these new features.
All the new features, okay.
But infrastructure as a service is up there now, so you can create, deploy your VMs, you can manage VNets, all the stuff that we did there with infrastructure. I don't think every feature is there yet. The stuff is being ported over. but that's pretty big. Before, we just had websites, SQL, the resource groups, and some of the other new features that we have up there. So it's cool to see some of the stuff going over there now.
Right, yeah. I think some of the stuff was only available through scripts earlier, right? And now they're finally moving all that into the portal.
Yep.
So that's good to see them do that. And then there's a whole bunch of new image gallery updates. They've reorganized the Azure gallery. I think they've come up with a whole bunch of new virtual machines so that you could do dev test servers and production servers in, you know, in just a couple of minutes. That, you know, I think it's all good stuff. I certainly encourage our listeners to go in there and check out all the new features in the Azure portal. Now, another piece of news that came out last week was Microsoft has acquired a company called InMage Systems. Is that how you say it? InMage?
Yeah.
InMage? How do you say that?
InMage is how I say it.
InMage, okay. That sounds better. So InMage Systems, and you know, to be honest with you, I have not heard of InMage until after the acquisition, which happens quite often, actually. But this is a company that has a very niche kind of market, which Microsoft thought was would be interesting to them. And what they do is they offer disaster recovery, kind of manage a disaster recovery for companies. So, so you know, even though you may not be an Azure customer, or you don't use Azure today, but if you've got VMs running on premises and you want to make sure that they're always available in case of a disaster, InMage can orchestrate running kind of like a shadow copy or of those VMs in Azure, and they'll be just sitting over there. They won't be doing anything, but in case of a disaster, InMage will then orchestrate the migration of all your workloads to the cloud seamlessly. That's how I understood it. Does that sound right, Kale?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that progresses because we had that product, right, with Hyper-V. Mm-hmm. So we had, I think it, I'm not sure if this is the right name now, but I think it was called Hyper-V Recovery Manager or Recovery Manager. Maybe it's just called Recovery Manager now. But it was there to kind of orchestrate if, you know, the on-premises version of your application potentially failed, you know, automatically, you know, bringing it up in the cloud and doing that thing. So this will be interesting to see. I think I know InMage has some really advanced systems. They're compared to people like SunGuard or HP or these top leaders in that industry. So I think it's cool.
Okay. Yes, and it's going to be integrated into our Azure Site Recovery Service. So that's exactly what you were talking about just now. Excellent. So then another new service that which caught my eye, at least, is Diagnostics as a Service. I love these names. Everything's as a service these days. So Diagnostics as a Service. And it's primarily for Azure websites, just to be clear. And it's essentially it's a service that's provided as a site extension of your website, and it you know helps you isolating root cause you know in case of a crash, in case of things like website is slow, requests are timing out randomly, you know the website web pages hang. So Diagnostics as a Service, or DAS, I suppose, it tries to collect all the information and it gives you some sort of you know possible root cause as to why that's happening. There's also this diagnose now button where you can you know just right now go and take a dump of IIS and all the VMs running. It collects all the HTTP logs, everything, packages it all up, and you know makes it available for you so you could analyze that offline. And you can also do more like a scheduled analysis where you know you can run the DAS sessions at periodic times during the day. And then take that information and process them. So I thought it was really nice that they had, you know, they're looking into the space. I suppose the Azure websites is supposedly the fastest growing part of Azure, right? I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the cool thing about this is years back, before I was at Microsoft, when we ran large scale web farms and websites, and anybody that does that will do this, they have all kind of monitoring tools around it, right? And deep monitoring tools, ones that can actually like log into the website, go do this certain things. You have this certain set of steps that you're going to go through, and it's going to crawl the site, and then it's going to look for certain attributes to make sure that it got a right response. Obviously, if the HTTP request fails, that's a failure, but it can actually check to see if the business logic is working, the middle tier is working, all that stuff. So I think it's exciting to me to see these things progress. I know SiteScope and a couple of those other big ones from Mercury, those were like the standards out there, and now it's starting to trickle in, and we're seeing, you know, some of this stuff come into Azure, so I'm excited about that. Same token, you know, trying to stay with the small business stuff too. Again, just lowering the bar. You don't have to buy another piece of software.
Right.
You know, if this is up there in Azure, you're going to pay for what you use. And in most cases, a lot of this stuff is coming along with like super low cost to no cost. You know, a lot of these metrics and monitoring things.
Yeah. This is all. This is all the advantage of putting in the cloud. You can just add these features on, and you don't really even know about it sometimes. Another piece of news that came out is this Gartner Public Storage Service Providers. They did the usual analysis, and it looks like Microsoft and AWS are in the leaders quadrant, the only two companies that are up there. So that's, I thought it was pretty cool. I know a few months ago, weeks ago, I think our IaaS infrastructure, we also were in the leaders quadrant, and now our storage infrastructure, the cloud storage, is also in the latest quadrant. So it's all good. So finally, just to wrap up, I know Evan's not with us today. He had a family engagement to take care of today. But he did want us to share some interesting information that's happening out of Charlotte, in the Charlotte office of Microsoft. Evan lives in the Charlotte area, and He wanted to make sure our listeners knew that there is an Azure Bootcamp that's running in the Microsoft Charlotte office on September 6th. And this is a single day event, okay? It's not a lot of time commitment over here. If you're an IT administrator, IT developer, ops professional, etc., and you want to know a little bit more about Azure, you perhaps listen to this podcast and you know, you have some high-level information that we give you, but you want to drill down a little bit, this is a one-day, no-cost event at the Microsoft office. And very simply, what it's going to tell you, understanding Azure, developing for Azure, administrating Azure, okay? Three things that almost any IT professional should know. Now, here's the kicker. They're limiting it to the first 100 attendees. So if you are sure that you can make the date, September 6th, at the Microsoft office in Charlotte, and you are in this business of managing the IT for your company, and you want to understand more about Azure, we'll put a link to the sign-up page where you can register for that event. Great. So I think that's about. Did I miss anything, Evan? Anything else?
Yeah, there's a bunch of. There's so much stuff coming out of this conference, you know, like new news. So I look for that in the next couple episodes. I'd like to dig into some of the API management enhancements that are continuing to evolve. So we have this whole, I don't think we've done a show on that. So I think that's a good one to call out. I've been working a lot more with that now and getting people to understand what that thing's all about. I think we should talk about that. There's also some new collaboration with Google and Docker, and it's some new open source projects that are going to be able to leverage Azure. So look for that. I think we should probably talk about that. Maybe we can get some guys on who are involved in that, if possible.
That's great. Yeah, I'm liking this whole Docker thing. That has a lot of potential. There are some blog posts on this. We'll put them up on the show notes so that listeners can read it offline. Well, I think that's a good show. Kale, thanks for all your insights. And hopefully we have Evan back next week. Until then, see you later.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.